This podcast is proudly brought to you by Infinity Media, incubating innovative businesses in the media industry.
Hi, I'm Gordon Muller. I'm the guru in the Doc and Guru podcast. Thanks for being with us. For those of you who don't know me, I've spent over 40 years in the media industry in South Africa and pretty much made it my home, my life, my passion. I have other passions, unfortunately, for my sins. I'm an Arsenal supporter and a Sharks supporter, so we're going to do pretty much everything on the show as it pertains to media, marketing, and money, but we don't take jokes about Arsenal or the Sharks.
I'm Doug Mateus, the doc on the show. And again, for those of you who don't know me, I spent 30 years in various companies in South Africa running different marketing functions. And the last job I had, I was privileged enough to work with a team that took the brand to the fastest growing brand in South Africa in 2018 with a 47% year-on-year growth. So that was a great achievement for the team, and I'm really proud of that. From a personal point of view, I do a little bit of cycling and also snow skiing, so we quite enjoy that. But again, today's discussion is around all things marketing and media.
Yep, that's right, Doc. All things marketing and media. No subject too big, no topic too small, no subject too hot to handle. Please get in touch with us on our Facebook page, follow us, like us, whatever it takes. We would love you to be involved with the show, and we really want to make it as inclusive and as energetic as I know this industry is capable of. And welcome back to the Doc and Guru podcast. Welcome back, Doc. Good to see you. You had a couple of interesting days chatting to some of our guests. We'll throw forward to those in the coming weeks. I think one of them, Ken Blanchard.
Blanchard. Gordon, firstly, how's it? How's it going?
All right.
Yeah, good. You guys turned top of the table?
We turned top of the table, but no, I'm trying desperately to forget about that now and get myself...
You've got to change the colors now?
In the World Cup football, yeah. I'm trying desperately somehow the passion isn't there. And I feel particularly guilty about that because we had Brad Habana on, and he did such a good job of ramping us up. I was really excited, and now I find myself just thinking, like, where's the excitement? I don't know. Maybe it's because of the distractions.
Yeah.
off the field.
I think a lot of it is, Gordon. I think it's one of those. It's a strange setup, you know. And I guess, you know, if you could predict it, you probably would have predicted that a lot of this would have happened because it was mounting controversy right from the start. Mm-hmm. I mean, from when they won it and how they won it and a whole lot of other stuff. But certainly, it's escalated. I mean, you know, the human rights. People of different sexual orientations, obviously the whole Budweiser, alcohol versus non-alcoholic beer. I mean, these are all off-field things, you know. This is even before we get one of the biggest names, Ronaldo, and his feud, not with FIFA, but obviously yeah. Man U. So there's a lot of noise before the ball's kicked, you know, and now that the tournament's on its go, hopefully people will get into it, and hopefully both you and I will get into it. But I must be honest with you, I've been so consumed and we're going to talk news today, and we're going to talk digital, and we're going to talk a lot of stuff. The content that came out is far more than the guy crossed and headed in for the goal.
Let's introduce our guest today. Welcome, Deline Muller. No family, we're not loading the show. Head of Media Intelligence, AdSpace 24, part of Media 24 Group. Deline, welcome. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, and so we're coming back to digital content. The photograph of Messi and Ronaldo, I think you were chatting about that. It's just kind of...
It's amazing. I mean, yeah, people are saying that it's the photo, you know, that's kind of what some people are captioning it. And they're saying broke the internet. I mean, in its first few days, you know, for those listeners not familiar, Messi, Ronaldo opposite each other playing a game of chess. There's no audio. It's not a TVC. It's not a moving piece of digital. It's a still photograph taken, largely put into digital media. Playing chess on a Louis Vuitton trunk. Mm. Louis Vuitton being the sponsors of the trophy. Yeah. So 36 million views within a few days for Messi and 28 million on Instagram for Ronaldo. So yeah, you know, let's see where that's going to end up. But again, that's the power, and we've covered it so often, Gordon, the power of sports marketing personalities. We're going to touch, Deline, thanks very much for your time. We're going to touch influencers and macro. I mean, these guys are mega. If you know the word mega with a dot, to it is how big they are. But yeah, so a lot of that off-field, Gordon. Some good and some, as we say, a little bit not so good.
Yeah, I mean, there's an argument for saying that Ronaldo's moving his chess pieces faster than he's moving himself these days, but that would be churlish, and I wouldn't be churlish, isn't it? But Deline, welcome again. Thanks for making the time. Talk to us a little bit about the evolution of Ad Space 24. You and I got chatting, and I kind of lost sight of the space station, the whole Media 24 journey to look at the new iteration and your new face of talking to the media industry. Just take us through that journey.
Okay, well, yeah, great. Thanks for having me. Great to be here. I think mostly for us it was like a real evolution, one of those big moves in business. We really looked at what was happening in the industry, what was happening globally, what was happening in media and marketing, what was happening to sales, what was happening to revenue, and what was happening to audiences. So we knew we had to do something quite big and radical. So that was really combining our digital and print sales force and giving them the tools to go out there and give the clients what they needed in terms of strategy across the board. So really giving an opportunity for integrated solutions and not that one focused approach.
I mean, in many respects, you'd say that the readers kind of got there before you, because it's just been a reality of that reading, whether it's on print or online, has just merged into one sort of behavioral pattern. So you're mirroring the reality out there. This is not just a corporate move.
Yeah, so it was definitely first thing was customer focused and what was happening from the world and what the industry was doing, as well as consumers. What were they doing? Where are they buying? What are they buying?
Yes.
And where are they looking for things to purchase?
Yeah.
So it was really that move for not only the news teams, but also for that whole advertising stream of what we needed to focus on.
And that advertising stream, Doc, I mean, I think, you're very strong in the holistic nature of the advertising interface. I mean, if you're not going to have two calls, one from the digital sales executive and one from the print sales executive. You want a holistic offering.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, Gordon, certainly as a client, I'd want that one face, and then, we can talk what media type and what is best suited for the campaign. And I think the big thing, Deline, also is an integration, from not the client side, the customer, the user, the end user doesn't care about how you got to this thing. They want to see consistency of message, of offer, all the rest of it. And I mean, I guess that's such an obvious point, but I mean, that must be a key sort of cornerstone of the strategy, is a fully integrated end-to-end campaign.
100%. Yeah, and I mean, the numbers drive it, right? Mm. I mean, it's all about the numbers from an advertiser point of view, from a consumer point of view, it's how you speak to them and where you're speaking to them on what platforms. Mm. But from an advertiser point of view, I mean, our numbers are the story. We have 17 million digital UBs. We have 7.2 million print readership. Read itself has changed. So, I mean, even in the readership studies of Fusion, it's a read study. It's no longer a print study versus So that has also changed, and that obviously brings the numbers up for us.
Yeah.
It also proves that there's always been some good readerships taking place in terms of print, but the combination of the two is phenomenal. And of that, we also have our access to the, call it the household market, which is the 17.9 million households that we can also reach. So across all our platforms, we literally are in every single household in South Africa.
Yeah, I mean, and because part of your offering, of course, is a very strong local newspaper offering as well.
So
that's when you're
million.
Talking the household. You're talking direct intervention in the household and then the individuals within the household, which I think is a nice play, really. Too much thinking. I mean, and this is driven to a degree by socioeconomic kind of segmentation, SEMs, and back in the dark ages, LSMs, where you're kind of looking at the household and not looking at the people who live in the household.
100%.
But just talking about the sales team. I mean, we've all had to learn new lingo. How have you got everybody speaking the same language? I mean, some people have had to trade in the old skills and the new ones. How have you gone about doing that?
So I think challenging wouldn't be a word, but it's been exciting stuff. I mean, it really, for the sales guys, it's, being in a digital, and I'm not in sales, so I'm speaking on behalf of them.
Yeah.
But I think from coming from a digital to a print now, it's almost like, but we've been there, like we want to go forward now.
Yeah.
But when you start seeing the data and how it brings together the integration, it just makes complete sense to do that. And obviously Media 24 is now moving into a completely digital first, customer focused, data driven that's where it lies. So the print is there, but the digital is also.
Yeah. You mentioned that it's all about the numbers and media, and that's true, certainly when it comes to the implementation and procurement. But I think in your case, you know, these are numbers with a big T. That's the trust factor, and it's something we've talked about on the show, and you and I've chatted about it as one of the power players from the Media 24 group. Is this issue of trust? You come out top dog on new platforms in the Edelman Trust Barometer.
Yeah, we're fourth year in a row. Yeah, voted the most trusted brand. So trust for us is our currency. It's massive.
Yeah, and that's something. I mean, you know, you and I were chatting last week. We've been working together doing some stuff on the fusion kind of study, and one of the things we took a look at was Nielsen's trust and advertising report, which is really intriguing. Mm. And if you look, you know, whether it's print or whether it's online reading, if you inject trust into the equation, the probability of responding to an ad increases by 150%. I mean, it's 2.5 times more likely to happen if it's in a trusted environment.
Yeah, it's amazing. I mean, we've touched, I think, a few times, Gordon, with different guests around trust. It's such an important aspect of any relationship, and certainly the one between journalists and readers and advertisers and consumers. But, John, and I think we'll chat later on, Delina. I know we're going to get into one of the main parts of today's discussion around a recent survey. And it's trust across the board. And let's get it to that point when we get there, Gordon, around trust within the youth as well, and it's not just limited to one segment. It's really a kind of a universal truth across the board.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about that, because what we specific focus today is on your Gen Z study and report that you put out recently, which is very interesting. I'm kind of a love-hate relationship, Doc, with cohorts.
Yeah.
In the sense that, you know, they seem to have an arbitrary date, and, you know, could be random, but I mean, it's no more random than 16 to 24. So I tend to fall on the favor of, on the favorable side of cohorts as a thought process. Gen Z is the global term. For me, there's a nice, easy fit, and I much prefer to talk about born freeze, but Gen Z born freeze in South Africa. Yeah. Tell us a bit about that report. I mean, it was a number of, studies that you did, or a number of discussion groups that you had, focus groups.
So it was pretty exciting. So it started from, we have like what we call our insights team. We just get people from Media 24 to invest and say, what do they want to do? We put them in a room, and then we kind of like decide on three or four things that we'll do for that year. So Gen Z, we call Gen Z, was what it came up. That came out of that group. And we then decided on doing a number of focus groups. We did some in Joburg, some in Cape Town. We put two Gen Zs from our media teams, one journo and one intern, and they had a ball. Like, they really had a ball. We also found like the kids related better. Like, they just it wasn't us sitting in the room. We were listening in, of course, but the kids that were in the room were really having fun. I mean, we put aside 3 hours for the session. We thought it was way too long. We had to close off most of those sessions after 3.5 hours. The engagement was great.
It's interesting. I mean, your focus groups, it sounds like it's a bit sort of, you know, of a blast from the past. But I'm more and more aware, reading global studies, that this shift to kind of ethnography in media research is really a very hot property right now. We're almost going way back. We've had such a tidal wave of numbers without context. We're going back for context now, almost to explain the numbers we already have. Yes. And I think that's the value of
it. Well, it's those nuances, those things you miss in just having data.
So that was
really why we went into that room, was to pick up on those nuances. Yeah.
But I mean, just, and I want to preempt, and we're going to go into the aspects of it now. But I mean, just in that limited study of yours, two places, Cape Town and Johannesburg, you've already seen differences. Yes. You know, and I mean, there again, you know, but surely they're all the same. I mean, you know, but we know that South Africans are not all the same. Yes. So that's just an example. So, I mean, Delina, let's get straight into it. Let's just talk about some of the highlights. I mean, the one big topic, and I guess it's the first on most people's list, is what I would call probably that complex, you use the word love-hate relationship with social media. You know, so let's just talk about the findings of your survey in terms of how did the youth resonate with social media in general.
Yeah, so for us, definitely a golden moment. I call them nuggets, golden nuggets. But for us, we saw within the social media, it was that the guys are like, they're not happy about it. There's a lot of anxiety within the guys that are on it. Not to say they won't be there, like they're going to be there. They're going to be there whether it's on Instagram, their favorite being TikTok, they're going to be there. But there's a lot of anxiety around being there. Mm. I can quote just a few things that they said to us. But I mean, it was, we literally asked them about how they feel about just in terms of their feeling towards social media, and it was a categorical no. Like, it's, they know how difficult it is and how much anxiety it creates for them while they're on that platform, and the amount of money they have to go spend on new clothes and looking their best and having the best cameras and the best phones. And that for me was like an eye opener, because having Gen Zs at home, I have two of them, and they're on their phone consistently.
Yeah.
I did not realize that they were anxious about it, you know. Yeah. So it was just, yeah. I think, and there it just comes to that, you know, the brands must be aware of that. They're highly influenced on these products, and we need to be quite aware of what's happening in their worlds, and it's quite anxious.
Yeah, I think it's. I wonder to what degree that disconnection. I think the word that you use in the report is disconnect. They feel disconnected. They recognize what it's there for. They recognize the contribution that it makes, but they feel disconnected from it. Is driven, you know, by the last 3 years or so, you know, of COVID lockdown, where you've been so heavily reliant on social media, perhaps more than you might have been in the past. There must be a feeder from that.
Mm. Yeah, it's interesting, Gordon. And again, you know, I mean, I read the study, Deline, thanks for that. But it's, yeah, I don't have a definitive answer other than, you know, some of the other stuff that we've been exposed to and read about cyberbullying, Gordon, you know, the whole pressure. And sometimes you can say and will say and do stuff on social media that you probably would never do face to face with somebody, you know, if they were across the table from you. So it's that extra pressure of, you know, am I going to get found out? Is that person going to confront me? So there's lots of layers of pressure heaped on. And I know we're going to get onto brands now, but I mean, even, I guess, to a greater or less degree, all of us, but certainly when I was at school, you had pressure to maybe wear nice stuff or, you know, be in a certain place or whatever, and maybe you can't afford it, you know, so the affordability factor comes into it, you know what I mean? So how do you, and again, I certainly have, and maybe Gordon and Deline, you have as well, is seeing youngsters posing in photographs in settings for the photo. You know, I was in a restaurant literally a few weeks back in Cape Town, and two young ladies came in and they had one drink, they posed for a whole lot of photos. I mean, not one or two, I mean, like, a whole lot, and then literally left, you know. So it was almost an Instagram moment. And I guess we were having dinner and we looked at it. It was quite peculiar for us, but we're not that market, you know. So let's just go into brands. I mean, let's talk a little bit about the brand influence in terms of people being influenced by brands, wanting brands, and then, you know, being exposed to brands. Brands are not new. And so how does that play into your study? What were the findings from that?
So, I mean, we looked at it more from a fashion and brands perspective, and it's apparent, I mean, they want to, and it's important for the Gen Zs from the research study that they look good. They want to look good, but price is very important to them. So it also came down to what the price was and wanting to be seen, but brands have to be authentic. These guys are looking through the stuff. They can see immediately when you're not authentic. And I think the word authentic comes up and up and up and up, and that came across the research quite strongly, that you need to be authentic in terms of brands.
Yeah, I mean, we're going to talk about brands and brands with cause in a moment. I mean, one of the key words that cropped out was with respect to their relationship with brands was this concept of thrifting, I think was the key word you used there. And, you know, not to go down, you know, another media owner's tunnel, but I mean, it's interesting that Roots discovered exactly the same thing. There is this constant drive. So I'm brand aware, but I'm also aware of my financial limitations. Yes. I think one of the phrases that caught my eye was, I see the clothes on Zara, but I buy them somewhere else.
Yes.
So I want the Zara look.
Sure.
But, you know, I can't afford the Zara buy. So it's an interesting one for me, Doc, because the brand influence, Zara or whatever it is, is still as strong as ever, but it doesn't necessarily play out into the sale and being credited to the brand, which is problematic from a marketing point of view.
Yeah, I think, well, you know, hopefully they'll grow into it from an affordability curve point of view.
Yeah. So, 100%,
you know, and it's, and I mean, a while back, And I can't remember whether we chatted to Doug Place on the show or I spoke to him privately, Nando's. The brand desire is there, but they found in COVID people became poorer, you know. So Nando's versus Chicken Nick and sorry, different category, but for the sake of the discussion, KFC is an expensive buy, and they then brought it down to under $50, called the economic quarter, playing on the word economic quarter, quarter chicken, $49.90, for that exact reason, saying that they wanted to get to an affordable price point where people could still buy the product, though the desire hadn't diminished. Now again, you know, for youngsters in your target market to love certain brands is no surprise, but they can't necessarily afford. I mean, we just spoke now about LV or Louis Vuitton, the kissed with the guys. Most youngsters in that bracket probably don't own that item. They may or may not aspire to that brand, I don't know. But certainly brands that resonate, like a Zara, you know, they'd probably want something that's very similar. And a lot of people do that. They'd see a celebrity wearing something in America that they would have maybe bought in the shop that isn't even in South Africa. So it's not a global. They would then buy something similar at an affordable price point, and it's a lookalike, you know, very close, but not, you know, you can't look at the label. And I mean, knockoffs are not new. You know, you see them on most street corners, you know, and some of the knockoffs are pretty good, and you can't really see the difference between, you know, a fake, I don't know, Gucci watch or a real Gucci watch, unless you look at the mechanics. So,
Look, I think the brands don't want to hear that because of the amount of money that they're investing. And then, of course, those people are going to aspire and they are going to go there. So you want to be in their face and you want to create that brand awareness, even while they're busy doing knockoffs. I mean, the words that they use were they go to Marabastat and they go and get what they need to do from there. So it's almost like they'll see things in magazines. They want to look and feel that same way. They'll go and get the knockoffs. But, you know, for the brands, it's brand awareness at this stage. It's really building that brand and making sure that your brand is in the presence, and that those, when they do become financially able, you're their first choice.
You're listening to The Doc and the Guru, proudly brought to you by Infinity Media.
I feel it quite refreshing because at the point of my sort of advertising life where I'm supposed to ride off into the sunset, it really comes as a great relief to me because, A, I can't ride, and B, I'm not ready for the sunset. But, you know, that the whole brand building thing, there's a resurgence in the understanding of brand building before you close out the deal. And I think that came through in your report, the value of brand building, and particularly brand building around a cause.
Yes.
And that seems to be a very sincere point of application for Gen Z.
So there again, we also found our golden nugget.
Yeah.
The views on brand cause, different to like what happened in Gauteng versus Western Cape, was phenomenal. Like the Gauteng was obviously, they were more skeptical. They didn't quite believe that where you, in terms of brand cause, you say you're going to do that, but are they getting the money? Like, we're not so sure. Whereas Cape Town was a completely opposite. It was like peace and love, give them the money. It was quite phenomenal. So it's important for brands to understand that. So when you have, you know, when you're putting an advertising together, it might not speak or resonate with the person in Gauteng versus the person in Western Cape. So it really needs to be know your audience.
Yeah.
And as a brand, if you choose to be on social media, be there and make sure that you are doing reviews and that you're talking back to that. Because the Gen Zs are all about comments, all about looking, all about talking and reviewing and that kind of stuff. So
But it's almost, you know, you talk, and I mean, again, I picked up that point, you know, the Capetonians want it, and the Gauteng guys, I don't really care about it, you know. Does the 2 rand really go to the ad hope for the KFC campaign, as an example? And I think it goes back, Deline, it's no different to, you know, when you offer win a car. You've got to put the photo of somebody winning the car, Gordon. Mm. Otherwise, you know, how do I know who won the car? Was there a car? You know, so it's that sort of factor. That's 50 years old. Nothing new about that. But the same now, brands showing people that they're doing work, and it's not greenwashing or wokewashing or any of that stuff, that your money does actually go to the charity, and we don't take most of your 2 rand for admin fees and staff and all the rest of it, because there's donor fatigue and people question things. So I'm, again, not too surprised by that. And again, I think that probably is across the spectrum of ages and cohorts, you know. Gordon, not just your Gen Z, but people saying, but how do I know? Show me. I think that's the important part, you know, is to do their unpackaging. And I mean, I think again, a while ago, Gordon, and I want to always just use my examples, but just for the sake of, I bought a pair of shoes, a pair of sneakers online from Adidas, and it arrived. Now, I was quite impressed because it arrived a day earlier, so that was quite cool. But more importantly than that, when I opened the box, it said they were made from recycled material. Now, I didn't know that when I bought it. But they told me on the box. So they did the work for the consumer. So it made me feel even better about my purchase, that I bought something that was recycled. And I think that's the challenge, you know, is to tell people what happens to their money, and maybe then more people will be part of that particular cause, whether it's ocean, you know, ocean plastic or feeding kids at early school development or whatever.
Yeah, I mean, you know, my running shoes are also made from recycled materials, but that's only because they're 4 years old. But, but for me, if you go back to 2010, one of the most exciting things, I was involved with the Visa campaign for 2010 World Cup in South Africa. And one of the activations which really captured my attention was from Brazil. That you took in your Visa card, the cards were all melted down in plastic, and the plastics from the melted cards, you were obviously given a new one, were molded and were used as the studs on the boots of the Brazilian players' shoes. So literally the Brazilians played on the back of Visa. I mean, which I thought was just incredible attention to detail. That's wonderful. I love that. It's an amazing story.
Yeah.
Coming back also, one of the interesting things again, which, and I think sometimes we forget this in advertising and media, is attention to detail. So when it came to the value and the causes, the brand causes, the Gen Zs were saying, price in, don't add on. Don't ask me for R5, price it in and tell me that it's already in there and I'm going to trust you on that, but don't ask me to add on. I thought that was an intriguing pricing kind of lens, which I hadn't thought of.
I think, you know, I guess it speaks to the point earlier about affordability, you know. So it's one thing wanting to do something and another thing being able to afford to do that thing. Whether it's buying a brand, I have the willingness but not the means. And the same with causes. Let's take your Cape Town cohort that says we're all for cleaning up the ocean as an example.
Yeah.
But I don't have, another R2 disposable cash. So if you price it in and you tell me you're doing things and I've got two items that are very similar and I can choose A or B, I'll choose the one that supports it, but I don't have the affordability, although I have the willingness. And I guess, you know, that's a money issue.
Just coming back to ads with causes, I don't know if you guys have had a chance to have a look at the John Lewis ad.
Yeah.
Did you see the trend? What did you think of it as a matter of interest?
Moving.
Moving towns because you're tired of it or moving emotionally?
It was moving emotionally. Yeah. It was something like, when you can, and you can see where they're going with it. It's almost like you see a lot of that happening now with a lot of the adverts. Like you just see that everybody's trying to have a cause. There's that one where the chocolate one with the taxi that goes off. I mean, that's emotional. That's beautiful advertising.
Yeah.
It's
very different for John Lewis, eh? I mean, it's a very, very big departure away from their previous work in previous years, which was very much around Christmas and the holiday season and lighthearted. And I guess it's the gift as well. I mean, the message is similar, but a far more somber tone. And a lot of people have come out in praise of John Lewis for that ad, saying it's a sign of the times, you know, that you're on the right side of the times, as opposed to, you know, where a lot of people are still battling, and we know that. You know, they're coming out of COVID very, very differently, and not everybody's joyous and can jump on a trampoline or open up Christmas crackers or do whatever people do. Yeah. You know, in previous years, the John Lewis theme was very much, when you saw it, you almost knew it was a John Lewis ad, whereas now I didn't. I mean, obviously I read the preamble, but, you know, it's a great piece of work, but very different.
Absolutely. And kind of got me rethinking some of my own thoughts about traditional approach to television commercials, because it's a long build with the big reveal, and I've been arguing the big reveal doesn't work anymore. Yes. And your Gen Z study said you've got five seconds.
Yeah.
There's a commercial in the old style, 45 degree angle upwards to the big reveal, which I hung in for the big reveal, which I guess is a testimony to how well it was shot on the front end, because you think, where on earth is it going?
Yes, but that's probably why you hung in.
So this is the case for that. Yeah, you're going to get drawn in. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, coming back, to the dynamics of advertising, there were some interesting observations. You know, the Gen Zs will give you their attention, but you've got to earn it pretty quick in the equation.
Yeah, so for us, I mean, in the study, the one comment was like, you have me, like you just said, you have me for 5 seconds. Mm. If you haven't got me by then, I'm gone. You know.
Sounds like my matric dance. Still.
You had me at hello.
So I think, I mean, in this generation, they're inundated with advertising. They really, wherever they go, wherever they look, it's there. I mean, for us as well. I mean, it's everywhere. So you have to stand out. And again, I use the word authentic. You have to be authentic. Yeah. You have to be curious. So I think that's where that ad went to. It was you become curious. What is this guy up to? You know, what's going on here?
Yeah.
So you may grab them for that long, but you need to get them in those first five seconds.
I mean, one of the things they talked about as well is something which I know from working with you on the Fusion study, looking at Reed, the new reading study, which is the hub or the recipient study for the Fusion database, is the issue of do young people read or not? Yeah. And there's a meme which kind of has evolved that young people don't read. But in actual fact, that's not correct.
Reading.
They are reading. It's just that the way that they're reading has shifted. And we talked about it, Deline, the other day. You know, that what's happened for me is that I think the publishers, many of them have got themselves trapped in an unvirtuous circle. Young people don't read, therefore I don't write stuff for young people to read, therefore they don't read, and so it goes. But if you probe the numbers in the Fusion study, And even before that in PAMS and the Digital Consumer Survey for Nielsen's for the last 3 years, what you see is that when young people read, they actually spend a hell of a lot of time reading. And their complaint is exactly what we see in your report. You're not writing stuff for me, so make content for me and I'll engage.
Yeah. Yeah, so, and I mean, we're jumping a bit ahead, but I mean, that's specifically where we are going in terms of why we did this research for Media 24. And that's to see, we know there's work to be done. Within News 24, we have 24% of our audience are Gen Zs, which is a good number. I mean, we have 12 million users on News 24. But we are picking up that there's things that they're looking for that we need to go and do. So we've also put like task teams together based from this research and other research, but based from this to put to some task teams together to go see what are those things that they're looking for. I've got some of the answers, but I'm not going to share them.
No, that's fine. So if you want the answers, you can contact Deline. We'll share her details afterwards. But, you know, coming back to your, you know, I mean, obviously, you know, the pedigree of Naspers, Media 24, you know, is steeped in the Afrikaans language. I mean, there's obviously more errors in that boat than just Afrikaans. But you're talking about X million numbers of unique browsers, etc. I mean, you know, Charlize Theron will be quite shocked to discover you've got more than 44 readers.
I actually went looking, Gordon. I thought that might come up. But yeah, to our surprise, we have 90,000. I mean, we know this stuff. I'm being facetious.
Yeah.
We have 90,000 subscribers on our network, which is probably the biggest in that. If I'm not mistaken, in Africa, and could be definitely South Africa. But we have 1.8 million readers. And we have 2.2 million unique browsers, so definitely not 44.
Yeah, and half of them are in Scotland, because I think they make up half the Scottish rugby teams.
That's true. Yeah, the surnames in those teams are...
And I'm a bit worried about our Afrikaans representation in Argentina, Doc, because we don't seem to have any. We had quite a few for Argentina, and... We don't have Afrikaans names in Argentina, and they're winning, so that might be something we need to investigate. But coming back to the social media and this kind of disengagement of young people from social media, one of them, the points of disengagement is the kind of erratic behavior of so-called influencers and the cancel culture. There seems to be a big pushback on fake influencers and then cancel culture.
Yeah, so there was quite a bit that came out of there. Again, we have to think of the nuances between Western Cape and Gauteng. They were quite different. But I think, I mean, in terms of just being that the social media and where they are, again, it's all about authenticity.
What's interesting for me is looking at the report and finding the same sort of patterns in the Deloitte's Gen Z Millennials 22 report, which I think is reassuring when you see repetition of insight. It just shows how consistent those lenses are. But the cancel culture, I thought, was interesting. What they said is there's a role to take people on. call them out, don't cancel.
Yeah.
I thought that that was quite a nice piece of useful wisdom. Call out, but don't cancel.
Yeah, it's a call, it's, yeah, I guess, called call out culture versus cancel culture, you know. And I mean, there were some specific examples about that, and maybe double standards had been in place and all the rest. But that's the point we made earlier, you know. It's so easy to sit back and cancel somebody across a platform when you're not in face-to-face. And I suppose that's, you know, one of the ills of today and one of the ills of social media. And also just touching on those influences, Gordon, I mean, one of the things that came through, as you said, has come through is truth. And authenticity. People like me, you know, I can see that Beyonce, as a mega star, would never use this particular product, okay? Yeah. And even the South African version of Beyonce. So your top celeb would not necessarily, and I think the example
they see straight through that.
Was so a body cream or a body butter or whatever. You know, you've got different brands and pitched at different markets and different price points. Nothing new so far. But what is a jarring thing is if somebody who you know has got a G-Wagon and has made multi-million rands or dollars
putting butter on.
Absolutely. And it doesn't, that's just not right, and people say, but now hold on, you know, rather choose somebody like me. I'd rather be influenced by my mates, my friends, who I know, if they say it's good, it probably is good because they're very similar to me, you know.
Yeah, well, I don't know much about body butter, but I've got a butter body which was brought to my attention by my 4-year-old granddaughter, who was poking me in the stomach over the weekend. And she was poking away, and I said to her, "Grandpa's got a stomach like a rock." She said, "Yes, but it's a squishy rock." I know all about butter body and body butter. Anyway, just coming back to, you know, the sort of one of the key issues and the trade-offs. There's a big trade-off between my career and my life.
Oh, yes.
I mean, an extraordinary number of people are just literally walking away without jobs, anything. The big resignation, that's something. I mean, it's kind of high risk stakes for young people, but they don't seem to see it as a risk.
Yeah, they don't. So, I mean, the same as the Deloitte study. They've got the same results coming out of there. We had the question for every single one in the room, the 9-to-5, and they were all like, "That's not going to work for me. It's not my place."
Yeah.
Except for one. We had one person said they want that. That's what they're looking for.
Yeah.
But everyone else was like, "It's not. I need more than that. This can't be it."
Yeah.
And I think we see it's maybe resonating from our own kids. You know, they see the way we work, and it's just work, and then they get into the working field, and they're like, "No, I'm not in for this."
Yeah.
So a lot of it was that came out was work-life balance. I wanted to be able to hustle. Mm-hmm. I want to choose my own career.
Yeah.
There were comments about I don't want to report to anybody. I mean, this is realistic things you have to at some point report to somebody because that's how you learn.
Yeah.
But I think there's a big shift, and I think this generation, although COVID's probably accelerated this hybrid working, but not for all industries. Yeah. It works for some. Mm. But I think for this generation, there's going to be a huge push, and companies are going to have to adapt.
You know, just an interesting point on that, and I was on an academic online panel a few weeks back, and somebody, there were four of us in the panel, can't remember the guy's name, who mentioned it. He was talking about this exact thing, you know, of people wanting to work in a hybrid fashion, and talking about the way of the future. And I then made the point, and I don't think it's a genius point, but I think it's a pretty obvious point, is how do you sensitize both sides of the equation? In other words, most people they're going to report to perhaps are not Gen Zs, okay, who come out of a different style, a historical style. Some of those may like the new style. Some of them may not like the new style. But, and I made the point there, how do you change all parts of the culture from the physical artifacts? In other words, when you walk into many companies, you know, I still got to put my finger and it opens the boom. So that's a barrier. How do I take that barrier away physically that allows me a psychological opening? And then, into the leadership being sensitized to the new way of work.
Yeah.
So if I look at some of those results and those comments, they're alien to me because I'm not Gen Z.
Yes.
But I'd often, you know, if I was in the corporate space, be managing and leading a lot of people of that age, and there's a disjoint, you know. And again, Gordon, that's not new. Mm. You know, to sit down and talk about both sides of the equation and not just say we're going to go 4 days, 3 days a week, 2 days hybrid without any other work. And I'm not suggesting it hasn't happened, but I'm saying maybe more of it should happen, that both sides of the party can understand each other. Because if I just read the comments cold, they're alien to me. That doesn't mean they're wrong. That just means, you know, it needs a bit more work.
Yeah. So this is, it's a good place to kind of wrap up. I'm just conscious of time. That hybrid environment poses real challenges for media sales executives trying to interface and get close to clients and understand the need. How do you see yourself playing that from an AdSpace 24 perspective, generating insights and interfacing with the market? You know, what's the next trick for you guys, coming up in 2023? I can't believe I'm talking about 2023.
Yeah, so I think we'll continue. I mean, in terms of innovation, we'll continue with that. Collaboration is critical. And I mean, getting people into the room is insane. Like, it's just you go in, you create a meeting, suddenly half of it thought it was online, the other half are there. You know, those kind of things. So I think a lot of, you know, for us, there's definitely going to be a lot of workshops coming from us. We've started with them, so we'll definitely get into the hearts and the minds of the agencies and just make sure that we're seeing agencies are going back to the office, or they're having like agency days and that kind of thing. So we'll definitely start doing that. I think the 2023 for Media 24, we've got a lot coming to play. We will see, we've got a big project on the first party data, looking at all our audiences and making sure that they're in a safe environment. So that's quite quite an exciting project that we're busy with. There again, my lips are sealed. we've got SNL 24 also launching early next year. That's going to bring in more of the looking at the middle market. Beautiful product, so that we'll see momentum coming through there. We've got a lot of projects that we're busy with News 24. Also, lips are sealed again. So there's a lot of things that we that Media 24 is busy with to just just engage more and make sure that we are in front of our customers with solutions and insights, because it needs to be driven by insights. It needs to be driven by a strategy needs support. And if we can get people in the room with us to have those conversations, we're halfway there to
I'm very excited about that, because we need a holistic approach. It's viewing, it's listening, it's reading, it's the total wrap that we require here. And I think going forward, that's really good news, because I think to a degree, publishers have been a bit guilty of sort of just kind of bogging down on the size of the numbers, not on the insights. And, you know, we were chatting last week and looking at the World Federation of Advertisers Future of Strategy Report 2022 for 2023. The meme which really kind of struck me, and we've chatted about, Doc, going upstream to create downstream solutions. You've got to get upstream, find the strategic insight, and then come up with the downstream application for that. But to all our listeners, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Deneen, thank you for joining us. It's been really great wrap. Doc, we're heading into the Christmas season fast and furious. I'm hoping to see you in your Santa outfit next week.
I thought you were going to say Santa Speedo. We've gone off the fluff Speedos and now the Santa outfit. No, I think I'll put that in. I don't even have to put a pillow in the thing. Like, you know, a lot of the young thin guys put a pillow in. I don't have to do that, so I'm okay.
But that image of Doc in his
pillowless
Santa Speedo. I don't know, Doc. It's a fan. Show.
Not a speeder. Deneen, thanks for your time. While Gordon rambles on, thanks for your time.
Thank you.
Just lastly, say someone wants to get hold of this report. How do they do it? What's the best way to get hold of it?
Yeah, so we're going to load it on our AdSpace. So AdSpace.co.za.
Okay.
We're going to load it on there within the next week. We've just got to get the market copy ready.
Okay.
And then, also on our contacts page, you'll see my name and, get hold of me.
Thanks. And as we always say, don't just listen to a great 30 minutes or just over 30. Be part of the conversation longer term. So, if you're a listener and you're interested in this topic, get a hold of Deneen and her team and find out more. So, from our side, Gordon, I'll leave you to close out. But until next week.
And Deneen, thanks for joining us. And to all the listeners, thank you for joining us. Let's keep talking.
And so that was another episode of the Doc and the Guru. Please don't forget to get a hold of us on Facebook, like us, follow us, subscribe to the podcast. And then from my side, you can get a hold of me on LinkedIn, Dr. Doug Mateus. I'm very active and very keen to hear about your views, and certainly will respond, and hopefully we can bring that into the show.
Thanks, Doc, and it's Gordon Miller, the Guru, signing off. Thank you for being with us and listening into this podcast today. You can pick up the discussion with me on my Twitter handle, @MzanziMedia, and I'd love to engage with you on any of the issues that we've taken on the show. And take us at our word. This is really going to be an open forum. There are no subjects that are taboo, and we'd love to have some of the younger, more under-listened, if that's the correct phrase, voices to join us in this discussion. Thanks for your time.
The Doc and the Guru, proudly brought to you by Infinity Media, incubating innovative businesses in the media industry.